May it please the court, I'm Shauna Stevens and I'm here representing Megan Burgess in this matter. And I will note to the court that this is my first time before this honorable court in my 15 years of practice. The issue before this court today is the equitable distribution award in a circuit court matter in a divorce in Spotsylvania County. And I think the genesis of the basis of a lot of the assignment of the errors in this matter is the fact that this case was heard by two different judges on two different days. On October 17, 2017, the Honorable Judge William H. Ledbetter began hearing testimony, the majority of the testimony, and examining the evidence and exhibits in the matter. It was Judge Ledbetter who heard from the plaintiff, his witnesses, the defendant, and her witnesses, all but the defendant's appraiser. And at that time, based on the defendant's motion, the matter was continued so that Judge Ledbetter could hear from our witness, the appraiser. In the meantime, Judge Ledbetter fell ill, and it was determined by Judge Ellis that he would take it upon himself to hear the remainder of the matter. And in February of 2018, Judge Ellis heard the appraiser and heard closing arguments in the matter.
Excuse, let me interrupt you and see if I can synthesize this. I know one of your arguments is that basically the court here by not dividing the property equally, but that's of course not required. I think there's a lot of case law that says the equal division is not required. Equitable distribution is what's required.
Correct.
And there are certain factors that have to be looked at in terms of that. Would it be accurate to say that, in essence, what the circuit court essentially found here was that both parties were kind of playing a little fast and loose with how they were spending the money and which accounts they were coming from, but that on the whole, most of the money was being used for an appropriate purpose, and ultimately that's why the court divided the property the way it did, and essentially, I won't use the term offsetting penalties because I'm not sure that applies in a legal sense, but it seems to me that sort of read between the lines, it seems to be the circuit court sort of found here. Both parties were somewhat at fault in terms of doing what they shouldn't be doing in terms of spending money, but on the whole, it was for appropriate purposes. Therefore, I'm going to just kind of offset that each side was doing the wrong thing and divide the property the way they did. What's wrong with that approach?
But, Your Honor, we're not saying that we were not asking the court to equally divide. What we're saying in our assignment of error is the court did not equitably divide those accounts. The major issue and the major assignment of error, it was a distribution of those accounts. And the court, Judge Ellis, seemed to base his opinion on Mr. Burgess's testimony. Mr. Burgess testified, for example, that he had approximately $75,000 left in his account, and he testified that Ms. Burgess had approximately $20,000 left in her account. However, upon my examination of Ms. Burgess, we presented actual documentation and evidence of the true balances of those accounts. And the documentation included Mr. Burgess's interrogatory answer, which indicated that he had in excess of $86,000 in his account. And Ms. Burgess's documentation, the bank statement, demonstrated that she had a mere $6,800 in her account. So our position is that Judge Ellis got those facts clearly wrong. There's a difference of approximately $22,000 that were not accounted for. And that was part of the issue I was trying to bring up when it came to the fact of Judge Ellis versus Judge Ledbetter. It appeared that Judge Ellis ignored the documentation. He ignored Mr. Burgess's interrogatory answer. He ignored Ms. Burgess's bank statement.
Can I ask you on that follow-up on Judge Humphrey's question? Didn't the final opinion letter and the decision of the court, though, wasn't it largely based on several of these assignments of error, including the one you're talking about right now, which I guess is largely assignment of error two?
Correct.
Didn't he essentially say, okay, a lot of funds were expended on a number of things, including renovations of the house that he questioned went beyond where it was supposed to,
correct,
and a trip to Scotland, and various other things, but that it was all marital funds that were spent, and they were all spent for essentially marital purposes. And so therefore, each party had taken a certain amount of money out of the joint account, a large amount of money, She took about $115,000. When they separated, put it in a separate account, separately titled account. He took out, after the refinance, about $96,000 or so and put it in a separately titled account. But they were all marital funds. And that, in the end, they were all used, as Judge Humphreys was noting, for marital purposes. So that what was left was the way he decided to essentially do his equitable distribution. Why is that? And we, of course, this is an abuse of discretion standard
yes.
review. Why would we say that he abused his discretion in that regard?
Your Honor, because the evidence in the testimony was clear that Ms. Burgess was forced to utilize her account and her account alone to do those renovations. Mr. Burgess testified and admitted that when she came to him and said, hey, we have these renovations, they need to be done, you have the pot of money that was set aside for the renovations, can you contribute to that? His response was no, and he admitted that. So he, in essence, forced Ms. Burgess to deplete all of the funds on her side to maintain this marital asset, which was ultimately equitably distributed, while maintaining his pot of funds. And our position is, if he would have said, okay, you take half and I'll take half and we'll each split that, then the difference in those accounts in the end would be much, much closer than the $86,000 that he maintained and he was able to maintain through Judge Ellis's ruling, and the $6,800 that she was, the mere $6,800 that she was able to retain. And that also bleeds into the request that Mr. Burgess be required to reimburse her for some of the post-separation marital expenses, such as the personal property taxes, the trip to Scotland. Again, these were things that dealt with marital issues, especially those personal property taxes. Instead of contributing to those with his funds, whether it was his income or if it was that pot of money.
The vehicles, right? On the cars.
Correct. And he was awarded two of those vehicles that she paid those personal property taxes on.
But basically, he turned around and did what she asked and what he wanted to do too, and gave those to the children who were already using them, right? Or at least the children used them, even if they weren't titled in their names.
Correct.
He didn't use them.
Correct. So they were using them. They were still titled in the party's names. But Mr. Burgess, who is earning over $200,000 a year, was turning that responsibility over to Ms. Burgess, who was receiving $4,000 a month in spousal support and $100 from teaching dance. So she was forced to utilize those funds. So again, instead of equalizing those accounts during the pendency of the separation by both parties contributing, he put all of that burden on Ms. Burgess during the period of their separation, which caused those accounts to be dwindled and diminished.
Can I ask you about assignment of error 5?
Yes.
And that's the gifts that were made by Mrs. Burgess's parents.
Yes.
Back when they were buying the first home that they were buying.
Correct.
$25,000 to, as a down payment, essentially. Most of it went to a down payment. And then $10,000 shortly after that for renovations to that home. So it would seem that a trial court could say, oh, we can trace at least that amount of money, and that's all that you ask for is the $35,000 to be. That he reimbursed that because it was, you're alleging that was her separate property because it came from her parents. But he says that he makes what appears to be a finding of fact and says, well, it appears that it was a gift by the parents at the time to both of them so they could purchase the house that they were going to title jointly. But not it wasn't just they were going to then title it jointly. He seemed to make a finding of fact that it was a gift to both, which there's a lot of testimony it was not. But if it's a finding of fact, if it's any credible evidence in support of it, we have to uphold it on appeal, right? And so I was looking at the testimony, and when Mrs. Grant was asked about that, she said, talking about the money we gave them $25,000 towards a down payment so they wouldn't have to pay for the insurance and all that sort of thing. And then she later mentioned that when she was asked specifically, but that initial $25,000 that you spoke of was specifically earmarked for a down payment on the first home, correct? I'm not certain that was totally all needed for that, but that is what it was for. And then finally, she was asked, but it was only to your daughter. That's what our letter said. Was it your intention to only give a gift to your daughter, or was it your intention to give it to your daughter and her husband? It was our intention to make a purchase of the highest possible. So given how those questions were answered twice, why isn't there credible evidence to support the trial court's maybe somewhat surprising finding of fact?
Well, Your Honor, we also had Mr. Grant's testimony. Mr. Grant was very, very clear that that gift was to Megan for the down payment. And
although he said he left all that up to his wife and he didn't really pay that much attention to that sort of thing.
But the funds were theirs, and they indicated that it was an advance on her inheritance, which Mr. Burgess would not have been a part of. So we have his evidence as well, Your Honor, and the court in Steinbeck has said that there's credible evidence to show that the gift was intended to be her separate property, which there was from both Megan's testimony and her father's testimony. Her mother's testimony was a little clouded. Then that presumption is overcome and the burden shifts to Mr. Burgess, and Mr. Burgess provided absolutely no evidence, testimony or otherwise, that it wasn't intended as a gift to Megan as an advance on her inheritance. So I believe that the evidence was clear that it was intended for Megan and Megan alone. Was Mr. Burgess a beneficiary of that? Of course he was, but that gift was to her.
So your argument on appeal is that the trial court on that issue, that finding of fact, assume you think it's a finding of fact,
yes,
that he was plainly wrong.
Correct, Your Honor.
There's no credible evidence to support it.
Correct. And back to that, the issue of the pot of money, like I said, it bleeds over into the issue of the debts as well. And as I noted, the documentation provided by Ms. Burgess clearly demonstrates that those numbers were off by thousands of dollars, Your Honor. And it's our position, based on Congdon versus Congdon, that the factual findings that were clearly wrong are erroneous, and that in and of itself is an abuse of discretion.
How much does it have to be wrong when you're sort of dealing with funds? Because I think, didn't he find it was 75 and 18 or something like that? And you're saying it was more like 86 and 6,800, more like 86 and essentially 7.
Well, Your Honor, I mean, that's a significant difference. That's a significant gain of Mr. Burgess of $11,000 to $12,000, and a detriment of Ms. Burgess of $11,000 to $12,000. That's a huge swing between the two, that's not recognized by the court for either Mr. Burgess or Ms. Burgess. And the court also erroneously stated and noted in his letter opinion that there was use of those funds in contradiction to the Pendennis Light order. However, the documentation, again, the bank statements clearly show that Ms. Burgess did not use that account post-Pendennis Light and even months before Pendennis Light. So for
you're
the court,
$115,000.
Correct. Those funds were already depleted to approximately $6,800 plus or minus a few dollars for interest and things like that.
Does that $6,800 include the $13,000 or to $17,000, whatever the amount was in the insurance proceeds?
No.
Or did that go in a separate account?
No. I believe she used that separately. I don't believe that went into the account. And another thing that the judge focused on was some additional monies that were moved around. However, again, that was based solely on Mr. Burgess's testimony. There was not one piece of evidence, not one exhibit that demonstrated
that.
You're
talking about the $23,000 and some dollars there.
Correct, which he based his opinion as to why it would be equitable to distribute the funds the way they were. As a matter of fact, again, if the court looks at those bank statements, it demonstrates that the only money that was transferred in was that $115,000, $116,000. There was never any money added, no $10,000, no $23,000, again, solely based on Mr. Burgess's testimony. Judge Ellis seemed to ignore any piece of evidence that was before him and simply looked at the transcript. Now, I understand he had a lot to do to fill back in for Judge Ledbetter, but unfortunately that fell short. Instead of reviewing everything, he only reviewed the testimony of Mr. Burgess, it appears. And our last assignment of error, which is important, is a denial of an award of attorney's fees. And again, Your Honors, this court has noted that it's based on what is reasonable under the circumstances. And when the court looks at the equitable distribution of the property in and of itself, where Mr. Burgess receives thousands of dollars more than Ms. Burgess, the fact that he earns $207,000 a year versus her $4,000 a month, it becomes evident that that's not reasonable under the circumstances, especially when the court noted that she, that both parties were responsible for putting forth the litigation. So we would ask the court to remand to the circuit court for either a rehearing or dealing with the issues presented.
All right. Thank you very much. We appreciate your argument, Ms. Stevens.